This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are slated to hear from the Lieutenant Governor of Louisiana, John J. Darden, pride of Baton Rouge High, and also former Metro Council member, former state senator, former Secretary of State, and future candidate for governor of the great state of Louisiana. J. Darden has much to talk about regarding his office and about what's going on at the state capitol. Also, on the show, another Jay, Jay Chevalier, the fabled singer from Louisiana. He's been doing his thing now for well over half a century. Former bodyguard to Earl K. Long, and his association with Governor Long spawned some memorable songs such as The Ballad of Earl K. Long and The Ballad of Billy Cannon and Lost in Louisiana 1959, and Jay Chevalier is still doing it. All this, now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is the local number. And outside the area, please call 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our leadoff guest is an important one, the Lieutenant Governor of the great state of Louisiana, John J. Darden. Man who's held many positions in his long and distinguished career, starting with student body president, 1977, is that correct?
That is correct.
That is correct, just 36 years ago. I think you were in law school then.
I was, back when law school was a part of the main campus right before it got separated.
Yeah, and I was a freshman, and even then, people were saying, that guy's going to be governor someday. And who knows?
Who knows?
2015, you're planning on running.
Well, I haven't formally announced, but I'm certainly planning to run. I've made that pretty clear. It all started kind of early a couple of months ago with all the speculation about the race. It'll be out there next year, but my expectation is I'll be running.
I talked to some folks in the camp of Senator Landrieu a few months ago, and they indicated before you announced you weren't running for the Senate that you would be the candidate they would most not want to run against.
Well, and that's what spurred, I think, a lot of talk, particularly in Washington, where that story bubbled up. Because of that, I think some poll numbers were out there that were suggesting the same thing. But I made it pretty clear pretty quickly that is not what I intended to do.
You've been out on the road. J. Darden has he's been doing it since he was elected lieutenant governor and took office on November 22nd, 2010, after a special election. But in particular, recently, you've been out touting tourism and last year, 26.2 million visitors. That's a record, isn't it?
It is. It's actually 26.3, to be specific. They were looking at the details of their report, but it's the largest number of people visiting Louisiana in our history, not post-Katrina, post-Rita. In the entire history of Louisiana, that's the largest number of visitors we've ever had. They spent almost $10.7 billion, and that meant $665 million in tax revenue for the state that would not have happened had not these visitors been here spending money. So we were on the road all last week celebrating National Tourism Week and talking with CVBs around the state, who are really the folks on the ground in each of the municipalities around Louisiana, encouraging visitors to come to their state and talking about the fact that tourism is a business. We create jobs for Louisiana, 8,000 jobs created in Louisiana last year in the hospitality industry, and one out of every 10 of us in this state works in the tourism and hospitality industry. So it's a often overlooked generator of revenue for the state of Louisiana.
And you're calling this vehicle that you're traveling the state in the Passion Mobile?
Well, somebody gave it that moniker. We had a mini coach that was wrapped with the information about the success of tourism, and it was obviously, you noticed it going down the road. It had some of the graphics and some of the photographs that are used in our advertising campaign, and we logged a lot of miles last week going around the state to the various communities as they celebrated tourism. They gave awards in their individual communities to people who had worked particularly hard in this area, and they talked about the successes that they've had in their particular area. So it was a tiring but a great trip.
And you'd have to be careful about who you asked to join you in the Passion Mobile, but you rolled across the state. 26.2 million visitors, and to put this in context, New Orleans, which is a tourist haven, I saw some figures, 9 million people in New Orleans. That means of the 26 million, most of them were to other parts of the state.
That's right, and that's what a lot of people don't realize. And New Orleans is doing tremendously. It has really rebounded since the hurricane, since the spill. Had a banner year as well. And in 2013, we feel, will be even stronger than 2012. We had a Super Bowl that brought $480 million to the greater New Orleans area and got Louisiana worldwide attention, despite the mini blackout there, and really, it was a great event, and everybody you talked to was talking positively about Louisiana. I was in New York, actually, earlier in the week, visiting with the publishers and editors of Travel and Leisure Magazine, Food and Wine Magazine, Southern Living Magazine, and several others about editorial content about Louisiana, and they're fascinated by our state. You'll be seeing stories about Louisiana coming up in the course of the next year.
And were you in New Orleans when the power went out?
I was.
Where were you?
I was sitting in my seat in the midway up, kind of in the corner of the end zone.
And what did you think? Oh, my goodness.
It's exactly what I thought. I thought it would be, originally I thought, oh, this is a blip and they're going to, and the secondary system will come on. But it was interesting to hear the reaction. People were not, and I was in a mix of fans for both teams, and people were very patient in the stadium. There was a bit of a level of frustration when they kept announcing power will be restored momentarily, but people were very patient and understood and were happy to see the game resume. And it's been pretty clearly stated by the commissioner and others that this is not going to impact New Orleans' opportunity to host another game, and I have every expectation that we will be hosting the Super Bowl in 2018, which is the tricentennial of New Orleans.
What did you think of the halftime performance?
I didn't see all the halftime performance, to tell you honestly. I slipped out to go to the other areas of the stadium,
okay.
But I caught a little bit of it. It was a typical Super Bowl kind of performance.
Well, thank goodness the power didn't go out then. But Jay Darden is a man on the move, and he's traveling the state and the country, making the case that Louisiana is a great place to live and to visit. And last year, 26.3 million visitors came to our state. How's your budget?
Well, it's obviously taken a hit, as everything has in state government. It's not quite as bad right now as it was last year, when literally half the funds that were directed for tourism were redirected elsewhere that we could not use to advertise and market out of state. We're in a little bit better shape this time, although, frankly, we've had to draw from the tourism budget to prop up the museum system, to prop up the arts in Louisiana, both of which are very important to our tourism message. But the only real lingering question right now, the state has a $3 million obligation to the NBA to bring the All-Star Game in 2014 to New Orleans, which is going to be a great event for the state. I'm not sure that all that's a pretty high sum considering what we had to pay for the Super Bowl, but it's going to be a great event for New Orleans, and that money has yet to be identified where it will come from. I do not believe it will come from my budget. We really can't stand that big of a hit, so I think it'll come from the general fund, or if there's some excess one-time money this year, I think it'll come from there. That's the only real mystery we have right now.
Well, as a senator, you were on the front lines of many budget discussions, including the Stelly plan. What do you make of what's going on right now? That seems to be a creative financing mechanism going on right now in the Capitol.
When times are this difficult from a budget standpoint and cuts are as severe as they are, you have to be creative when you're looking at how to resolve the budget process. That doesn't mean you forsake the Constitution. It doesn't mean you do anything that is against the laws of Louisiana. We've got to have a balanced budget, but you got to try and stop the bleeding in some of the areas, particularly in higher education. I'm very concerned about higher education and the level of funding for the medical schools and for higher ed in general, particularly LSU. But I think what the House has done in the bill that was sent to the Senate is a lot of it's going to stick. It's a sensible way to approach things. It's, for example, on the motion picture tax credit, and I've been a big proponent of that. We created that 10 years ago, and it's been tremendous both from a practical standpoint and an intangible standpoint in marketing Louisiana. The changes that were proposed originally in the governor's budget would have crippled the industry. The industry had ways and suggestions to save money and reduce the credits, and once they got a seat at the table and voiced those views, it was incorporated into the budget that the House has sent to the Senate. So that's an example of something I think has worked well. It's a reduction in the budget. It is reduction in the credits that are given in some of the areas of the motion picture tax credit, but it's a smart way to do it that's not going to cripple the industry and is going to close some loopholes that enable some people to get benefits that they probably shouldn't have gotten.
What did you make of the tax swap proposal? Was that something that was palatable?
No, and it was, you know, you had two really smart guys who I like and who are friends of mine and I think are very, very talented and capable guys, Stephen Morey and Tim Barfield, who were the primary architects of that plan, but it had not been properly vetted. You can't change the tax system of this state by proposing something a few weeks before a legislative session begins and say, here it is, this is what we want to do, and I think the governor frankly realized that at the beginning of the session when he backed off the plan and there were other possibilities that were floated out there. There just wasn't enough time and enough input from the people who are going to be most affected, that is the mm-hmm. people of Louisiana, to talk about how to approach that. That's a discussion that we ought to have, but we ought to have it with everybody at the table and talking about what the long-range implications will be, what the practical implications will be, and what's the fairest thing to do for the state. Right now, Louisiana is the fourth lowest taxation state in America, according to the Tax Foundation, and that's something that's great for Louisiana and great for business, and we want to keep a level like that. We don't want to make a change that's going to drop us in that rating, and we wouldn't want to do something that would perhaps make it even better, but that's a pretty significant bit of data for the state to talk about.
Well, you were involved in a plan that had a widespread discussion, years, in fact, multiple tries to get it passed. It gets passed, and then it gets repealed by the legislature. And Vic Stelly will be on the show next week, by the way. But was that unfortunate, or have you become a Stelly naysayer?
No, I supported the plan, obviously, when it was proposed. It had been looked at very carefully, and it was intended to create some stability in mm-hmm. the budget. And that's what it did, because it balanced the levels of income that were available to the state. But a key provision of it was that the legislature had the prerogative to abandon the income tax proposals if they felt it appropriate. And a couple of years ago, at a time where they felt it appropriate and there were surpluses, it was done. Had it not been done, the budget situation would be a lot more stable than it is right now.
You mentioned higher education, and yesterday Chancellor Wharton was on this show, and others, including the chancellor, have indicated that it's an extreme situation. You're former student body president at LSU. What would you do to finance higher education?
Well, I'd make it a top priority, and it hasn't been. It was on the chopping block based upon some contingent revenue in the proposed budget, and even that creates a level of uncertainty on campuses across the state, drives professors away, and keeps people who might otherwise want to be in Louisiana from coming to Louisiana. It has not been the top priority that it ought to be. In the Foster years, we reached a point where we finally fully funded the formula that provides for higher education, and we've retreated from that, and it's crippling campuses. I've talked to college presidents. I've talked to people, and it's a real dilemma for a lot of campuses, in particular LSU Baton Rouge, at a time when we've been trying to make certain that this is a flagship university and one that is going to attract research dollars and talented professors to come here, and they are suffering right now.
Without a change in strategy in the next 2.5 years, what could happen to LSU and to Southern and to other universities in this state?
Well, we could wake up and be in a situation where LSU no longer has the elevated status nationally that it does as a land-grant university, as a research-based university, and that's a huge concern. And as sometimes is often said, as goes New Orleans, so goes the state from a tourism standpoint, and there's some validity to that. As goes LSU Baton Rouge, so goes the rest of higher education. And that's why you have to treat the flagship as a flagship, and you have to fund higher education at an appropriate level that's going to allow these schools to succeed. There have been problems in higher ed, as there has been throughout government. And there have been some severe belt tightening and ratcheting back, which has been good. And I salute the governor over the course of the first term of making Louisiana even more cognizant of what we'd been talking about for years in the legislature, that we had to reprioritize and spend money more wisely. But we've really reached a crisis point, I think, in funding for higher ed.
Are taxes ever acceptable?
Cigarette taxes, as an example, is in my mind was an acceptable tax, particularly dedicated for health care needs where we have some problems. But I'm not one who's saying Louisiana needs to raise taxes. I think we have to manage better, prioritize more, do away with the notion of cutting across the board, which is always the easy way to fix a problem budget time. And there have been some efforts to try and move away from that. But that when you cut across the board, you reward bad programs and you punish good programs.
297-5633, your number. Outside the area, 877-217-5757. We'll have another segment with Lieutenant Governor Jay Darden after this 90-second timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Lieutenant Governor Jay Darden is with us, and your numbers are 877-217-5757 or 297-5633, and you may reach us by email at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Lieutenant Governor Jay Darden, former Secretary of State, former State Senator, former Metro Council member, former student body president at LSU, and a prominent lawyer to boot. He's had a busy life since he left Louisiana State University, and I remember when he was at LSU, he was involved in athletic matters on the Board of Supervisors, supported Joe Dean before Joe Dean was ensconced as the athletic director. And come next month, end of next month, in Natchitoches, Louisiana, one of the hidden jewels in Louisiana, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, opens a new facility. You've been prominent in that endeavor.
It's hard to believe that Louisiana has not had a Sports Hall of Fame building in our history, but there has always been for years, for decades, a Sports Hall of Fame selected by the Sports Writers Association. And finally, we're going to have the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame and Northwest History Museum in Natchitoches, on the end of beautiful Front Street in Natchitoches, right on Caney Lake River, or Cane River Lake. And it's a magnificent building. It's really an architecturally very interesting and progressive building that the people of Natchitoches supported wholeheartedly, and it's going to recognize Louisiana's almost unparalleled athletic history. The inductee class on June 29th, as the museum opens, includes Shaquille O'Neal, who will be there for the event, as well as Tommy Hodson, Kevin Mawai from LSU, Shonda Rubin, the great tennis player from Lafayette, several other inductees. This is going to be a real, real treasure and a destination for Louisiana.
Last year, Jay Darden listed his 200 most prominent Louisiana people of all time on the 200th anniversary of Louisiana becoming a state. I think you need to add one every year. We're now at 201. You have a big ceremony.
It's a great idea, Jim.
Number 201. And maybe we could offer some suggestions. You know, Tim Brando made the original list.
Jim Inkster should make the second you're suggesting.
No, how about Mary Landrieu? She would be a good choice.
You know,
or Bobby Jindal.
Bobby Jindal's on it.
Is he on the
list?
Yes,
he is. I added five last year because I got input from people, which I was requesting, and it was very interesting. People said, well, you forgot Lafcadio O'Hearn, for example, or you left out Walter Isaacson. And I said, you're right. But I didn't want to remove anybody because I kind of went through kind of an arduous process, at least myself, to kind of figure out how to do this. But it was really kind of for fun. But we decided to post it, and it prompted some discussion. So I added five people. So we actually had 205. Adding one a year would be very interesting. Mary was on a list of others who should be considered, and kind of an honorable mention kind of list, if you would. And her dad, Moon Landrieu, was on it, and she was referenced in the list, as was Mitch, because of the Landrieu family impact.
Well, I think she should be on the list, and that would show that you're a bipartisan kind of guy.
Well, if you look at that list, I am a bipartisan kind of guy. I mean, I've tried to identify people who the criteria was the most notable Louisiana people who had made an impact within this state and whose name and presence was also recognized beyond the borders of Louisiana. And if you look at the list, and it's still posted at LouisianaBicentennial2012.com, and we'll have it on LouisianaTravel.com when we take down the other website. There is a lengthy list of other people who certainly could merit inclusion.
Well, speaking of being a bipartisan person, I think that may be one of the reasons why some hard right-wingers who are prominent in this state have some aversion to supporting you. If you're in the governor's race, you're probably going to be challenged from the right and the left. Can you survive a race like that?
Well, I've survived those kind of races every time I've run statewide. I've run against and defeated the former chairman of the Louisiana State Republican Party, the sitting chairman of the Republican Party, and the son of the former chairman of the Republican Party. So I've kind of been used to the party not always being there. But you know, it's a big party now, and a lot of people want to run, and there are a lot of views, and I recognize that. I accept that. It's been the reality I've dealt with when I've run statewide, and I certainly will be prepared to accept it in any future race.
This time you might be challenged by a U.S. senator.
There's some talk out there about that.
Does that make you lose sleep at night?
No.
Didn't think so, but he would be a formidable challenger.
He would.
He would, and it would probably be a very tough, tough race.
Well, I've been in tough races before.
Well, yeah, we know.
I understand how that goes, and I would expect races to be tough in Louisiana. We're a state that loves its politics, and we're passionate about many things. That's why our brand is Pick Your Passion, and we talk about food and music and recreational opportunities, fishing, sports, festivals, and add to the list politics. And sometimes even that draws people to Louisiana to kind of see the birthplaces of some of our colorful politicians or see where they hail forth.
And as we saw with Billy Nungesser, you're not afraid to counterpunch.
Sometimes you have to do that. If you're hit, you're going to hit back.
Okay. And you got George Kennedy, who's been with you since 1977.
You're exactly right. We go back to LSU days, and he's an extremely talented political consultant.
I think he keeps different hours than you do.
He definitely keeps different hours than I do.
297-5633, Lynn and Melrose. Lynn, you're on the air with Lieutenant Governor Jay Darden.
Good morning, Jay and Jim. Speaking as a scientist, Jay, if you were to become elected in our next governor, would you agree with me that we should get rid of the science?
Oh, I don't know what happened to Lynn, but if you call back, we'll give it another shot. Charles on North Foster. Charles, good morning. You're on the air with Governor Darden.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Lieutenant Governor.
Good morning,
Lieutenant Governor. As a Baton Rouge, I know that Southeast Breakaway School District will have a devastating effect on LSU's ability to recruit African-American athletic department. So I'd just like to, where do you stand on that?
All right, he was talking about the Southeast School District.
Yeah, I didn't hear everything he said.
Well,
I believe you're saying that it
would support the measure.
It would, yeah, I would be for the measure. It's a tough call because it's potentially going to have some impact on the East Baton Rouge Parish system, but I think the question that needs to be answered, and I haven't followed every detail of this, but if that district can ensure the public and the legislature that it's going to be able to meet the legacy costs that are going to come with the district, and they're satisfied they can raise the revenue to do that, I don't have a problem with what they're doing to create this district. I think a smaller governance district can govern better, and obviously there's a lot of frustration out there.
Let's give Lynn another shot. Thank you, Charles. Lynn, you're back on the air.
Yes. Sorry for the interruption. Jay, what I was asking about is Bobby Jindal's Louisiana Science Education Act that is such an embarrassment to the people at LSU and other universities, and it flies in the face of what we're trying to do to save the coast and so on. Would you, if you were elected, would you work to overturn that act?
I don't know that it affects at all our ability to save the coast. I'm all for saving the coast, and I'm not convinced that has a big bearing on it. And frankly, I'm not convinced that has had a huge detrimental effect on our ability to bring people to Louisiana. If the legislature voted to repeal the act, I would sign the bill.
But wouldn't be out front saying repeal it?
I'll have to defer on that until I can look at it a little more closely as to whether I'm going to lead the charge to do that. If the legislature repealed it, I'd sign it.
Do we put too much emphasis on social issues at times?
Well, I don't think I would say we put too much emphasis on it, although it does tend to occupy a lot of time because it stirs a lot of passions whenever you're talking about issues like that. And I think it's only natural in a legislative process that's going to get an inordinate amount of time, and it's going to get an inordinate amount of time in the media. And that's clearly what has happened in issues just like that.
297-5633 is your number for Governor Jay Darden. The governor right now, the chief executive, Bobby Jindal, leaves the state, as we know, on occasion, at least 86 days last year. Does he inform you now more readily than before?
He does.
He calls you personally?
He does not. But there is a mechanism. We get an email notice from his office when he is when he's landed, wherever it is he's going.
Well, you probably read the editorial in today's Advocate, which closes with Governor Jindal has seemed more comfortable campaigning than governing. That's bad news for a state that needs a leader, not a relentless candidate, referring to the governor's trip to New Hampshire this week in the midst of a contentious legislative session. If you're governor, will you be out campaigning or traveling to other states while the session's going on?
No. You know, you have different styles, and my style would certainly be one to be extremely engaged and hands-on, and that's the way I'd handle things.
You, as I stated, going back to 1977, had been mentioned as a prospective gubernatorial aspirant, but any plans to run for president of the United States?
Absolutely not. I love Louisiana. You know, this option, not option, this discussion came up about going to Washington or running for the Senate, and I made it very clear that I love this state. This is where I want to be. I believe my best service can take place here in the state of Louisiana, dealing with Louisiana issues, Louisiana problems, and making us the best state we can possibly be.
Karen notes, and we've, of course, discussed this before, the curiosity of two elected officials, the top two in the state of Louisiana, both being graduates of Baton Rouge High. We don't talk about that a whole lot, but different years, of course. In fact, we had the principal, Nanette McCann, on this show. She says she sees more of you than the governor. Do you still
hang out there whenever they ask me or whenever I have an opportunity to go back to Baton Rouge High, I'm there. I love the school, and when I graduated, of course, it was Baton Rouge High School. When Bobby graduated, it was Baton Rouge Magnet High School. It became a magnet school, I guess, 5 or 6 years or so after I graduated, and it's been a real source of pride to the East Baton Rouge Parish school system, and it will continue to be, and the new campus is absolutely magnificent.
You played there when they had a basketball team.
I sure did.
As did Bob Pettit.
Bob Pettit played on the stage when they had a basketball team. That was the basketball court when he played in the 50s. Literally, the auditorium that you can now go see that's been beautifully restored was the basketball court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I said, you were on the Metro Council. Jay Darden has experience at just about every level of government, and I'm sure he has opinions about what's going on. And since Charles brought up the breakaway school district, what do you think the biggest challenge right now is in this community and across the state regarding public schools?
You know, it's easy to say a lack of parental involvement, but I really have to say that's at the root of the problems we're facing in public schools, I think, because kids just don't seem to be motivated at home. I had a very interesting discussion with some very bright seniors from four different schools in Baton Rouge a couple of weeks ago in a very innovative leadership program that's been created, and I spent that time listening to them. These are high achievers, kids who are disadvantaged but who are going to go to college probably with scholarships, and I'm asking them the same question you're asking me, and they're expressing their frustration at the lack of interest that their peers have in getting an education. They seem to see no future in being educated and staying in school and getting a high school diploma or going to college, and they were expressing that frustration, and all that's got to start at a very young age. I think the innovative early learning programs that have been initiated in this state and have continued to be funding are vital to try and create opportunities for kids who are not getting the kind of support at home that they need and who need to be exposed to the value of education, the value of learning, and the importance of creativity in the process.
As far as this vouchers discussion, last year the bill passes, but the funding mechanism is shut down. It seems that it was fairly clear going in that it was not constitutionally sound. As a lawyer, how did this happen? The governor has some good people around him, but seems like he got some bad advice on this one.
Well, the process, frankly, didn't work like it should have last year. The bills were rammed through, I think, too quickly without adequate discussion and thought to the constitutionality of it. And there was such a rush to make certain this passed in that last legislative session. The bill clearly had some constitutional deficiencies. I felt it did when it happened, when the discussion ensued about number of votes needed to pass and dual object questions and whether or not public money could be used for the vouchers. When we established when the voucher program was established, and when I was trying to establish it, when I was in the legislature, we recognized that we weren't going to be able to use those MFP dollars in order to do that. So you've got to make a commitment to find the dollars elsewhere. And I think that's going to be the challenge this year for the legislature. I think they will find the money, and I don't think all the kids who have gone to these schools are going to be disrupted, but it's going to be another significant chunk of change that's going to have to come out of the budget.
What about the retroactive possibility, though, the money last year?
Well, that's probably something that would be litigated again. If there's an attempt to say this was not a proper expenditure of the money, the defense, of course, one of the defenses will be it had not yet been declared constitutional. It was a legislative expression, and it was properly funded and enacted by the executive branch.
All right. Michael asks about your friendship with the mayor. You and Mayor Holden, some may not know this, are close friends.
Well, we are. We've served together for a long time. We both graduated in journalism from LSU. We're in school at the same time, have known each other since our LSU days, and we have a great working relationship. We've been involved in a number of projects together unrelated to government, and we've worked together when we were in the legislature, although we clearly differed on a number of philosophical issues. But I would say, yes, we are friends.
Speaking of journalism, any thoughts about the new publisher of The Advocate, Mr. Georges?
I don't know, John. I'm looking forward to meeting him. And you know, if The Advocate was going to be sold, I'm glad that it was not sold to a national chain. I'm glad that it was bought by a Louisianian who I think has Louisiana's interest at heart. And I hope and I expect that The Advocate will remain a Baton Rouge-centric newspaper, although it will expand its coverage and create New Orleans editions or perhaps other editions. But The Advocate is one of the finest newspapers in America, as far as I'm concerned. And I think it's absolutely the finest sports page in America. And I hope that it's going to continue to provide a wealth of information. I think it has done a good job of providing editorial balance between conservative thinking people, liberal thinking people, if you want to use those stereotypes, and providing a great deal of local news coverage. And that's what I think people want in a newspaper.
297-5633, a bit more time with Jay Darden, and then we'll go to Jay Chevalier. A question from Paul. He says, does the Governor Darden, believe three unrelated people should be able to live together?
That's a Steve Myers question. I've completed my service on the Metropolitan Council, and I'm going to leave that to that body.
Oh, my goodness. That one is, as we know, is a local hot potato, and is... Tip O'Neill once said, all politics
is local.
Yeah, and you know that better than anybody. Another question from Stephen about the Seafood Promotion Board. There's a bill that would move that to your jurisdiction. Is that a good thing?
I have a meeting about that this afternoon, as a matter of fact, with Norby Schaber, the author of the bill, and he's working very closely with us to listen to our concerns about the bill and our input on the bill. There are a lot of nuances to that law that have to be dealt with. The Seafood Board does things other than just promote seafood, but if the bill passes, we'll certainly take on that challenge and we'll promote seafood as we do anyway with the dollars that are made available to that Seafood Board. And I think Senator Schaber is extremely interested in moving his bill, and he's also very cooperative in listening to the concerns we have.
Well, we look forward to having you back again soon. On deck is a guy who ran for lieutenant governor, didn't do as well as you, another Jay.
He's a great guy. He's a great ambassador for Louisiana. He made his fame in the late 50s and in the 60s, but he is as popular today overseas, particularly in Great Britain, as he's ever been, which is very interesting.
It is interesting that you have a guy in Great Britain singing about Earl K. Long and Billy Cannon, and people are going bonkers, and we'll find out more about Jay Chevalier. Your favorite Chevalier song?
Well, it has to be Billy Cannon. I have that original 45 that I listened to back when it first came out. I know all the words, but that
you're
is
only
my
5 years old when that.
Well,
came out.
I know, but I've got an original 45, and I probably got it obviously when I was a little bit older. But the other great song he's written a bunch of them, is "Lost in Louisiana," and I use that in a lot of presentations I make, and it's a great old song about Louisiana in 1959.
And here it is as we part company with one Jay and get ready for the next Jay.
Uncle Earl caught a fever and he almost lost his mind. Well, they hooked us on a feeling that's a kept us all a reeling deep down in our minds. And I got lost in Louisiana in 1959.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher producing, and we're joined now by Jay Chevalier, one of the fine musical performers in our state's long and storied musical history. He's been doing this for over half a century, and we just heard Lost in Louisiana, 1959, favorite song of the other Jay, Lieutenant Governor Jay Darden. Good morning, Jay Chevalier.
Good morning, Jim Inkster and Jay Darden, our next governor, I'm hoping.
Well, Jay Darden, he ducked out. He had a 10 o'clock appointment, so we've got another Jay solo, and that's okay. You've got quite a story to tell. I mentioned that you were a bodyguard to Earl K. Long. How did the two of you hook up back in the late 50s?
Well, I just come out of the Marine Corps. I was 18 years old when I went in the Marine Corps, and I was 22 when I came out. And I was going to Louisiana College, and I wrote a song. A friend of mine requested, said, you need to write a song about Earl Long. He's more things happened to Earl Long than anybody else. And so I wrote the ballad Earl K. Long. And later on, it got played in Baton Rouge. And from then on, it's a history. He heard me after that, and I stayed with him until he died.
Well, let's give a listen to the ballad of Earl K. Long. From Jay Chevalier.
Driving around in a black limousine. Everywhere he goes, there's a great big scene. All of the folks come from miles around just to see the show when he hits town.
Sing, sing, Louisiana, sing. Sing about the Battle of New Orleans. Clap your hands and sing this song. Just a little story of Earl K. Long.
Now, when you met him, was he hanging out with Blaze Starr?
Yeah.
He was?
Yeah. I was hanging out with Blaze, too, after I got hired by Uncle Earl.
How was that experience?
Well, Blaze was quite a lady. I mean, she was 28 years old at the time, and he was right at 65. And, I mean, that was a handsome couple. The governor of Louisiana squiring around the number one stripper in the world, the highest paid stripper in the world. At that time, she didn't need any publicity. She already had publicity, but she went international and she got to date Uncle Earl.
Well, he lost his mind. I'll tell you what, Jay. Kevin, can we see what's going on with him? Earl Long was institutionalized and died shortly after his association with one Blaze Starr. And Jay Chevalier was a young man. Just fresh out of the Marines, and he's suddenly at the arm of the man who's running the state of Louisiana, the legendary Earl Long, brother of Huey Pierce Long, and Earl Kemp Long was a legendary figure in his own right and a most controversial man, and Jay Chevalier was there from the start. And in 1959, when Earl Long was in his prime, and governor of Louisiana, the Louisiana State University Fighting Tigers were defending their national title. They had gone undefeated in 58, and they were undefeated at the time, facing second-ranked Ole Miss in Tiger Stadium, Halloween night, Billy Cannon's run. Cannon runs 89 yards to win it 7-3 for LSU on a punt return, and that prompted perhaps Jay Chevalier's best-known song, The Ballad of Billy Cannon.
Down in the South, where they say you walk, there's a man known as a Mr. Football, Billy Cannon. Billy Cannon. Look out! There you go, Billy Cannon. You can go to the East, you can go to the West, but everywhere you go, they say he's the best, Billy Cannon. Billy Cannon. Look out! There you go, Billy Cannon.
Jay Chevalier, when you wrote that song, you admitted you weren't much of a football fan until you saw Billy Cannon run 89 yards, and you were at Earl Long's side when Cannon made his famous Halloween night run, weren't you? Jay Chevalier, are you there? Okay, I tell you, Kevin, I think we got a little bit of problem with his phone, and hopefully we'll be able to rectify it and see what's going on with Jay Chevalier. Now, Jay Darden mentioned that Jay is popular abroad. He performs not only in Louisiana, of course, but also he performs in Great Britain, where he is kind of a cult hero, and it's hard to believe, and if we can restore communication with one Jay Chevalier, we will find out about the popularity he has across the pond. He's a man who's been on the world scene, and I don't mean that as an exaggeration, for about half a century. In 1962, Jay was performing in an engagement at the Golden Nugget in Las Vegas. And in 1963, a year later, 50 years ago, he added a 19-year-old Baton Rouge girl, Grace Broussard, to his show that included Dale Houston, and Dale and Grace recorded an old Don and Dewey Squires song, I'm Leaving It All Up to You. It was while the three were on tour, Jay and Dale and Grace, that the song took off, rising to number one and selling 2 million copies. How about that? Jay Chevalier, can you hear me, Jay Chevalier?
I'm here.
Okay, well, let's get back to we were starting with Earl K. Long, and you were at this side when Billy Cannon made his famous run, and I guess that night involved two people who were prominent in your career to this day. You're singing about Earl and Billy to this day.
That's right, and Earl has passed away, and God bless him. That was the most exciting time in my life. Two important things happened in that 4 years. I went in the Marine Corps, and I met Earl Long. Both of them were tough.
Well, was Earl played accurately by Paul Newman? Was that a good choice to be the actor in the film in 1989?
You know, I think so. I would have probably selected somebody else, but Paul pulled it off. I didn't think he would, but he did.
Now, Jay Darden talked about how you are popular in Great Britain, and I've mentioned that as well. You're making a trip over there soon, aren't you?
I'm playing July the 10th July 10th on Wednesday. I arrive on Thursday. I rehearse Thursday afternoon, and I'm on stage, on the main stage, Friday night. We're expecting right around 45,000 people for the Americana Festival. That's my name for the festival. This is my third trip to them.
Well, Jay Chevalier is a member of the Rockabilly Hall of Fame. He was inducted into the Louisiana Political Hall of Fame in January of 2003. And in 2008, he was inducted into the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame. I don't know of anybody who has that kind of acclaim. Now, I think Jimmy Davis is both in the Political Hall of Fame and the Music Hall of Fame, but I don't know that he's in the Rockabilly Hall of Fame, Jay Chevalier.
I don't know. Jimmy Davis might be the only other one.
He's not in the Rockabilly Hall of Fame, but you are.
He's not?
No, I don't think so. No. But
no, he didn't. I never heard Jimmy do any rockabilly music.
No. Another Jimmy probably did when he was with his cousin, Jerry Lee.
Yeah, you're right. And Jimmy Clanton, probably from Van Ruys.
Well, that's certainly true. You rub shoulders with all these people through the years. Louisiana, as Jay Darden noted, probably has, in addition to the richest sports culture and catalog of heroes, it has is probably same kind of legacy with music, doesn't it?
Yes, it sure does. And it's just amazing. I used to tell people in Las Vegas, you might think you can pick the same, but you walk down the streets in New Orleans and find somebody on the corner that just blow your hat off.
Now, you ran for lieutenant governor and lost. Was that a good experience?
It was a great experience. I ran for it for a couple of reasons, and I was trying to recapture the feeling of being with Earl when I was with Earl in 1959, 1960, and just to touch the people of the state of Louisiana. We got 26,000 votes, spent less than $26,000, and which was 2% of the votes. And I also used it. I wrote a book called Earl K. Long and Jay Chevalier When the Music Stopped.
And you're married to a woman who hails from the great country of
Cuba. That's right, Gisela. We've been married 15 years.
I think you unveiled another recording a few years back with me on the air, Castro Rock.
Yeah, and I've been to Cuba three times, and I was on a radio show back here in Louisiana, and I sang a little bit of the Castro Rock. If you know, had known it, you'd probably lock me up, but I got out of there.
Have you been back since?
No.
No?
The last time.
Mm-hmm. I recall you being quite militant, Jay, when Ilian Gonzalez was returned to Cuba in 2000.
Right. I wrote a song about you.
I know, but what's happened to that young man? Do you know?
Well, okay? Evidently he got mesmerized with Castro's communistic regime because they gave him and his family a real nice house, and there's not very many nice houses in Cuba. Most of them are
looked like where Hurricane Katrina come through. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, he fell into that trap, and he was young when he went back, and I can't blame him because his family was still in Cuba.
Now, you were the bodyguard for Earl Long, and when we lost contact with you a few moments ago, you were in full bloom talking about the Blaze Star Association. Did you have to arrange meetings and that sort of thing with the governor and Miss Star?
Yes.
Yes?
I would go pick her up and bring her to his room, or I would drive the limousine or drive the car. We had a brand-new Buick LeSabre at that time, and also Cadillac, that large black cab. And a lot of times they'd be in the back seat and I'd be driving.
What did the First Lady, Blanche, what did she think of this?
Well, she didn't like it at all. Of course, I didn't know her at the time. I met her afterwards, after Uncle Earl died. So I had no opinion on her whatsoever at the time.
You know, when that movie came out, I called her to get her opinion of it, and she hung up the phone on me. So apparently that hit a sore spot, and you might imagine that it would.
It was a real sore spot for me.
Okay. Trey Jumonville asked, Mr. Chevalier, does he remember writing a song about Senator Boise Jumonville?
Yes, indeed. Jumonville, the old fox hound. He's picking them up and laying them down. Running the old fox through the swamping hill, but he won't outrun old Truman Bill.
How many songs have you written through the years, Jay?
Over 100. I've recorded over 100. Mm-hmm. I've written probably 1,000.
Well, when you're performing in a place like Great Britain, what kind of songs do they respond to most? What are the most popular recordings?
Well, they respond to Billy Cannon. I mean, they call it Mr. Football over there. They don't call it the song Billy Cannon. They call it Mr. Football. They really like Billy Cannon, the Castro Rock, because that's stone rockabilly. And we've got a little bit newer version of Uncle Earl, about Earl K. Long, and they respond to that, too, because the Longs were from England originally, and they kind of accept him as their own.
Now, you were in... right in the heart of Hurricane Katrina several years ago. It hit your home, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Put a tree on our office and a tree on our home.
Did a lot of your memorabilia go out the door?
No, most of that was in Central Louisiana.
Okay, well, that's good.
Just a minute.
And this man we're speaking to is from Forest Hill, right? From...
What did you say, Jim?
I said you're from Forest Hill, Louisiana, the hometown of one Clyde Holloway.
Yes, indeed. That's right.
And what was the catalyst for your introduction to Governor Long? It would seem that it would be somewhat surprising that a governor, a man who's been on the political scene at that time for about 30 years, would take this 22-year-old kid from Forest Hill under his arm. What was the catalyst?
That song. That was the catalyst. And then after that, I remember I just come out of the Marine Corps and I followed direct orders. If Earl had told me to jump off the Mississippi River Bridge, I'd ask him which side.
So you were saying...
I mean, he wasn't used to having people that if he said go over and pick up that waste paper basket and bring it over here and put it under this apple tree, that's what I would do because direct orders was what I'd been used to for 4 years in the Marine Corps. And so when he would say, go do this, I would do that. As a matter of fact, he told some of the people, and I said, Jay Chevalier, he's crazy. He'll do anything.
Where were you when he died?
I had just fed him the last meal he ever ate in this world 4 hours before he died. He was in the hospital, in Baptist Hospital in Alexandria, Louisiana. And I had gone out to Forest Hill, which was about 15 miles away, to sleep. Because I'd been up for 9 days in a row with him, and he died while I was gone. I left him about 12 midnight. He died about 6 o'clock in the morning. And he was afraid of needles. And the last thing he said, from what I understood from a nurse that was there, was, y'all don't get none of my blood. Go get some old Max Wayne's blood.
Well,
hello?
You only knew him for a couple of years, and those were two profound years in the history of the state and in your personal odyssey. Well, Jay Chevalier, we thank you for joining us today. Good luck in Great Britain, and we look forward to talking with you soon. Take care, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. God bless Louisiana.
There you go.
Thank you.
Jay Chevalier. Come Monday, we'll have a legendary figure on this show. Among our guests is Lou Carter, the man you'll hear on the air on WRKF Saturday morning, Sunday morning. He's been here from the start since 1980, and Lou Carter turns 90 years old next Wednesday. So Lou Carter will be celebrating a birthday with us on Monday morning, and we will talk with him about a remarkable life in radio and beyond. Louis Loring Carter. And we'll also have a discussion, a continuation of what we started this week about whether City Park should be changed. All that Monday. Until then, for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.